Welcome to Embracing Your Season, Raising Littles and Understanding Teens. Here's your host, Paige Klingenpiel.
Friends, welcome to Embracing Your Season. I'm your host, Paige Klingenpiel. We have another amazing interview for you today. My guest is Dr. Meg Meeker. Now, before we get into the conversation, a little bit about our guest. She is a global leader authority on child-father relationships. She has over 30 years of experience as a pediatrician. I would love for her to be my best friend. Does anybody else have a pediatrician as their best friend? Because I think that would have been very valuable for me growing up with my kids and not only knowing what to do with them. She's also an author of the best-selling book and now a movie, Strong Fathers and Strong Daughters. She is a host of a popular parenting podcast, Parenting Great Kids. She's a TED Talk speaker and an international speaker. Our conversation today is all about fathers and the importance that they have in our kids' lives. So you definitely want to stay tuned. It's a pretty awesome conversation. Well, Dr. Meg Meeker, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so glad that you're on the show.
Oh, it's fun to be with you, Paige.
So we want to talk about fathers today. This is just such an important topic. I know that we all come, well, hopefully we all come from having fathers at some point in our lives. And if not, that's something that we can talk about as well. But digging into the importance of fathers in people's lives, can you tell us a little bit more about why that's important to discuss and dig deeper into?
Oh, sure. Well, a couple of things. If you look at the research, there's a paucity of research out there on fathers that will help fathers. You know, it's usually about 2 or 3 to 1 mothers to fathers as far as research and papers and so forth. So fathers are really sort of left in the dust when it comes to wanting to write about them, know what their needs are, and so forth. And the second thing is, if you look at the impact of a father who is home with his kids, across every parameter, a child does significantly better if there's a father in the home. They're less likely to be depressed, less likely to have anxiety, more likely to graduate high school and college, more likely to excel at just about anything they do. And so, you know, from a physical aspect, a psychological aspect, and a mental aspect, kids do unquestionably better when a father is in the home. And third, in our culture, we tend to really play down, if not put down, the role and the importance of fathers in a child's life. And this is the exact opposite of what's true. And this is what prompted me to do a lot of work on fathers, because I found that the kids in my practice who were struggling with school or relationships, depression, anxiety, or so forth, eating disorders, the kids who had fathers involved in their lives recovered much more quickly than those who didn't. And so I really wanted to do some research and work on figuring out the significance and importance of fathers in a child's life, because there's an enormous disconnect between reality and truth and then how fathers are being portrayed in our culture through media, movies, songs, you name it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious then, what is it about fathers being present with their kids that help alleviate the numerous issues that you had mentioned before?
You know, it's a great question. It really depends on whether you're talking about a son or a daughter. We know that when it comes to sons, particularly teenage sons behave much differently when a father is in the home versus a mother in the home. I don't know if you remember, maybe a year ago, I don't know if it was in Louisiana, but there was a school of high school kids who were out of control. The boys in the school were out of control. They were violent. They were disrespectful. They were into drugs and so forth. And a group of the fathers said, "We're done. We're not going to put up with this anymore." So they convened 40 dads, and each of the fathers took a day where they simply walked the halls in the school. That's it. They didn't go in and teach the kids or anything. And within a couple of weeks, the violence and the misbehavior of the boys plummeted. So there's a sense of the presence of a father carries a tremendous amount of power and authority in a teenage boy's life. And because we see such dramatic behavior changes in kids when a father's around, where they're behaving much better, we know that they're behaving better because they feel more secure. And so teenage boys feel far more secure when a man is present. As far as a daughter is concerned, daughters behave differently as well, but daughters tend not to act out as much as boys as far as violence, bullying, and so forth. And girls do better in school. They have healthier relationships, romantic relationships in high school if they have a good father in the home. There's just a big difference between the influence of a mother and the influence of a father from the perspective of the child.
So you were talking about how the difference of a father with a teen boy compared to the mom. And I mean, I have two daughters and two sons. Majority of them are teens. I have a preteen as well. But it is funny. I'll say one thing and then my husband will say another, the same thing. And yet my child's reaction is so much more different, you know? And I think if anything, that could actually lead to, and this is going to be the next question about the disciplinarian piece, that sometimes I feel as the parent, because my kids aren't listening to me as well as I would want to be, like as compliant as I want them to be, or as quick as I want them to respond to my request, that I allow or lean on my husband to be more of the disciplinarian. Talk to me a little bit about how that's limiting his role or even detrimental to his role in the home, being the disciplinarian.
Yeah, no, it's not detrimental at all. What it signifies is that in a child's eyes, Dad is strong. Dad is no nonsense. Dad is the one where the buck stops with him. Dad is the one who is ultimately responsible for what happens in the home. And when kids have a sense that Dad is the last and the firmest boundary, they feel safer in the home because they don't want to be acting out. They don't want to do stupid stuff, but they'll try, and they'll try with all their might to act out. And when they know they have, if you think about a child, you know, walking down a wide road and they're all going to want to go off to the left or off to the right, if there's a tall wall on each side that says, no, if you go off that road, you're going to fall into a big pit. If there that wall, if you will, is a father's authority, the father keeps them from falling into that deep pit. You know, when that's the mother doing it, the kids will try to jump over it because they don't really believe that mom is going to be able to stop them for some reason. There's another dynamic in the mother relationship and the father relationship from a child's standpoint. And this is just what kids tell me. I haven't seen any research with this. From a child's perspective, mom is mom. Mom has to say certain things. Mom is obligated to discipline. Mom is obligated to tell you you're great and you can do anything. But dad isn't. And so when dad chooses to encourage you or to praise you or even to discipline you, it carries a different meaning to the child because the child goes, wow, he really means this. You know, mom says a whole lot, but maybe she means it and maybe she doesn't. She's just mom. I don't mean that in a derogatory way, because kids feel very safe with their mothers because they feel that a mother, compared to any other person in their lives, has to be there. She has to love them. Because if you start off life or live your life and your mom doesn't even love you, hang it up. Hang it up. She's the starting place. And so she's the ground that a child stands on. But a father in a child's eyes doesn't have to love them, but if he chooses to, then they're really big stuff and they will listen to their father. And this is what I found kids communicating to me about the difference between their mother and their father.
Wow. I think that just like blew my mind. I'm processing what you're saying is, and I've experienced that in my own life, right? And with my own kids is that I'm mom. In fact, my daughter even said that this morning when she asked me to take her to school instead of riding the bus, she goes, well, you have to do that. You're my mom. And I looked at her, I was like, girl, I don't have to do that. I'm doing it because I love you. Yeah. Whereas my husband laughed. He's like, yeah, she's going to take you. I, on the other hand, would just go straight to work and leave you on the bus type of thing. So there is that different dichotomy.
One of our daughters just had a baby And I was expected to go and help her for 4 or 5 days. Now, she didn't even think about my husband going and helping her. Yet my husband and I work in the same medical practice.
Wow.
You know, and so, you know, why me? It's because that's what I do and that's what I love to do. But mom has this sort of willingness to do things and to shower kids with affection and empathy and love. And kids know that. And I think that's good. I mean, they think that's good. We feel unappreciated because our kids don't say, wow, mom, you didn't have to do that. Thank you so much. They just know that loving them and caring for them and driving them to school and helping them after they have a baby is part of what we're good at and part of what we love to do. And I think that's good.
Yeah.
I think that's very good. I feel I get a lot of comfort and a lot of satisfaction from the fact that my kids want and expect me to always be there and have their back. Not that my husband wouldn't, but he would have their back in a very different way.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned earlier about how culture has perpetuated fathers in the wrong light. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. If you trace it back to the feminist revolution in the 1970s, and I was there, I went to an all-women's college in the 1970s, and there was this energy that began to grow as far as women were concerned. We had the Equal Rights Amendment. Women said, you know, whatever men do, we want to do it as well or better. We're going to take charge of our lives. We're not going to, you know, put up with sort of the glass ceiling. We're going to charge ahead, and we're going to sort of, I remember women saying, beat men at their game. So this competitiveness started, and then that sort of morphed into not only can we be better professionally, but we can be a better parent. And then that morphed into, well, we can not only be a better parent and a better professional, we don't need men. And so this was the mentality of the culture. And out of that grew the media and television and movies who played into this and fueled it. So if you look at any movie, and I would challenge everybody who's listening to do this over the next 2 weeks, whenever you watch a movie or a sitcom, look at how the father is portrayed compared to the mother. You rarely see a strong father who has authority. I don't mean a bad guy. I mean a man who really knows what he's doing and is a strong man. You will see, however, the mother in the show who is often a tough bird. You know, you look at even the show Modern Family, very, very popular. Claire kind of runs the show and fills the goofy dunce. Or you look at other shows, you think of Adam Sandler in different shows. He's portrayed as a dad who really doesn't know anything. So if you just pay attention to videos and you pay attention to songs and television, it's hard to find a depiction of a good father. Even look at Father's Day cards. They make fun of dads. They talk about dads as hogging the channel changer and lying in their lazy boy and watching football all the time. You'd never find a Mother's Day card that puts a mother down like that. But it's putting fathers down has become a fun sort of way to joke. They have become the joke of a lot of conversation.
That's interesting. So then if that's being modeled in media, and it's particularly for those that don't necessarily have the exposure of their own healthy father figures, that's it. That's what they're being modeled. Mm-hmm. Would you say that that's becoming a systemic issue then with fatherhood in maybe the United States?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because particularly you see a men who don't have a father and girls who don't have a father, and they have this craving, an emotional craving to have a man in their life. They're not necessarily aware of it, but they know there's something desperately wrong with their lives. And they know, well, on an unconscious level, they are desperate for a father to fill that hole in there. Well, if that part of them is empty and they don't know what a good man looks like or talks like or how he treats a woman, they turn to the next best thing, which is how a father is depicted visually in a movie. And they absorb that. They become, oh, that's what they act like. That's what they look like, because that's the model that they know. And so then they begin to live that out.
So then I guess the next best question is then how can we become countercultural in our homes? Fathers, how can they learn to depict as you as spoken?
Well, I think that's a critically important question. And I think that it's important for all women, married women, and mothers in the home to recognize that to some degree, we have bought into that as well. I did, and I know. And that is that we are told we know how to raise our kids best. We know how best to talk to our kids, particularly if we have daughters. And we live with this sense that we know our kids better, and we often take charge and we sort of dominate conversations, and we're the ones who want to, you know, come up with kids' schedules. We're the ones who want to run the show as far as our kids and home are concerned. And that means that on a subconscious level, we communicate to our kids that we're really in charge. And dad doesn't always know what's going on in the house. So dad shows up and we want to respect him and we want to be nice to him, but we are the ones that really know what's happening. And that can impact the way we speak to our husbands. Here's an example. My husband and I have three daughters. They're grown, and a son who's grown. And my husband would be talking to the girls about something, and I would be in the other room listening. And in my mind, it's like, no, no, you don't talk to girls that way. They're not going to understand it. And I would swoop in to the conversation, and I would sort of push him out because I was convinced I knew how to talk to daughters better. That's a small example of how we operate in our family systems, is that mothers who can be pretty competitive when it comes to child rearing, we can often come in and take over and subconsciously give our kids the message that dad really doesn't know how to do things. Here's another example. I didn't even think about this. A couple of years ago, I was out with our granddaughters, they're twins, and their dad was out there and we were talking, and something happened to one of the twins, and she came over to me. And she didn't want her dad to pick her up. She wanted me to pick her up because I'm the sort of huggy grandma. And I wanted her to go to her dad, but she didn't. She was more comfortable with me. So I picked her up and just kind of cuddled her. My other son-in-law came over to me and said, "Don't ever do that again." And I said, "What did I do?" He said, "You communicated to your granddaughter that when she's in trouble, comfort comes from you, not her father. She needs to know that comfort comes from her dad. And you came in and gave her a very different message." He was absolutely right. That's the kind of thing that we do that sabotage a father's relationship with his kids. And we don't even know we're doing it.
Interesting. And so this was actually one of my other questions was, in my home, particularly because I have a background in therapy, my husband always defers to me when it comes to those emotional conversations. And I take the charge. Absolutely. Now, I don't want to. So I have talked to him about, can you have these conversations? Can you be empowered to do that? But how can we switch those roles? Any suggestions there?
Sure. I think that first and foremost, you know, we have to stop criticizing them in our minds. How many times do we complain that our husbands don't help around the house or don't do things? And so we ask them to do it. They say, "Okay, I'll do it." And then we complain about the way they did it. I will guarantee you that your husband doesn't necessarily want to have those conversations with the kids because he's afraid that they're not going to be as good as the conversations you have, or that you might be judging him. And if there's one thing that fathers don't want to do is fail. So rather than risk having a conversation that might not go as well as a conversation you would have with the kids, he says, "I don't want to fail. I don't want to do it less, you know, perfectly than mom would do it. So I just won't do it." And I think that fathers know they're going to be criticized because I was pretty good at criticizing my husband. So what I learned to do was speak up to him and not down. For instance, even because men need respect, they have to have respect. You know, Emerson Eggerich's fabulous book, Love and Respect. Women need love and men need respect. If a father doesn't feel 100% respected in his home, he's not going to talk. He's not going to have good conversations. He's going to defer to somebody else. So we need to speak respectfully to our husbands, and we particularly need to do that in front of the kids. If our kids mouth off at their dad, we need to say, don't you ever talk to my husband that way. You know, your dad is not to be spoken to that way. You know, often we just sort of sit in the background and let things go. So men are used to, in general, women being more assertive and take charge when it comes to tough conversations. So we need to encourage men to do it, our dads, and let them be when they have the conversations, even if they have a bad conversation. Let it be, and applaud our husbands for doing them. Never, ever criticize, because we are very critical and we don't even realize that we're doing it. And that will stop a good dad in his tracks from having a tough conversation.
And so I'm just thinking through some of the things that I have even brought to my husband and say, I really want you to have this conversation. And I know other men feel the same way. Like, they don't want to necessarily have that conversation with their daughters about dating and, you know, the intimacy that can happen and the choices and the boundaries. But I feel like it's so important for dads to have those conversations. And so what can we as wives tell our husbands, the impact that that conversation will have on them? How can we encourage them even when they don't want to have those?
Yeah. Well, rather than saying you need to have the conversation, you need to have the conversation. A father feels like something's wrong with me. She's pushing me because I'm not doing things well enough. So don't do that. You say, you know what? When Carol is around you, I've noticed that her eyes light up. I have noticed when you take her out and do this, she is in a much better mood. And what I'm sensing is that she's getting a lot from you that she doesn't get from me. And so I think from her perspective, she would love to hear from you how a boy should treat her or what she should do when a guy is too forward with her, because she'll listen to me, but she doesn't respond as well to me as I see her respond to you. And what you've done there is you have encouraged your husband. You know, you made him feel like there's something really good that he has to give his daughter, and she wants it. Rather than you're falling down in your role, you better buck up, buddy, and have this conversation, or she's going to get into trouble. You know, he's much more likely to have that conversation when you talk about the positive impact you see your daughter have when she's around her dad.
Yeah,
because men want to be wanted, and we don't help them feel wanted by our kids.
Gosh, I love that, because then you're focusing again on the positive, the things that you see that are truthful, and it encourages them. So it already builds up that foundation. If you're already doing things great, let's add to this by, you know, additional conversations.
Well, and also if men believe that this is something their kids want, they're much more likely to do it than if they believe this is something we want them to do. Because when we say, this is what you need to do, we're essentially saying, I know how to parent well, and you're falling down a little bit, so I'm going to help you parent better. Men don't respond. I wouldn't respond to that.
I can't imagine why. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, if my husband came home and said, you know, you needed this because good moms do this and good moms do that. I've even done stuff as harmful to my husband as say, you know, my brother is such a great dad. Ooh. He takes his sons on all these trips all the time, and I know his sons like it. I think that would be a good idea for you to do. Boom, done.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to do it because I'm comparing him to somebody. And whenever you compare them, you make them feel that they're missing something. So you never want them to feel that they're missing the mark or they're missing something. I wrote a book, Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, and I very purposely never criticized a dad in the book. I never showed an example of how a father fell down and did it poorly. I always use examples of fathers who got it right. And that inspires and encourages fathers. What doesn't encourage fathers is the mantra that modern mothers and women have, which is, again, look, we got this and we know how to do this and we sort of need you, but we sort of don't need you. But if you're going to be involved this way. But again, the problem is we hound them to be involved. But then when they're involved, we criticize the way they did it. We need to keep our mouths shut and we need to say thank you when they did it. End of story.
So let's talk about the parents or the dads that, you know, they have teenagers now and they don't feel like they have been as involved in the lives of their kiddos prior to that point. So what encouragement can you give them about their impact on their kids' lives?
Yeah. Well, what I always tell dads, because a lot of dads who haven't been involved feel very guilty. They know they've let their kids down, even if, you know, they act like they haven't let their kids down. They know in their hearts they've let their kids down and they live with a certain sense of guilt and remorse. And so what I always tell dads is, you know what? Your daughter always, always wants more of you. She wants more healing or she wants more time with you because you will be in your daughter's heart until she dies. You will be there. And so you have a choice about what you do there. And then you say, and I know she is in your heart as well, but she sees you as the parent figure. Even if she's 40 and you're 65, you're still the parent. And she wants you to initiate any kind of healing. She wants you to take the first step. And I tell dads, it's never, ever, ever too late to have a better relationship with their daughter or to reconcile with their daughter. And they feel intimidated, but once they know their daughters desperately crave that, then they're more likely to move in. The difficulty comes when you've got a very wounded teenage girl, 25, 40-year-old woman, who's been desperately wounded by her father. She's going to act really nasty to him. And everything she's going to say or portray to him is, get away from me. I can't stand you. You're dead to me. Well, why is she saying that? Because she hurts so badly. If she didn't care about having a relationship with him, she'd be neutral. She wouldn't care.
Sure, apathy.
But the very fact that she's angry towards him should let him know she wants him. But he needs to begin to sort of help peel those layers off of her heart, if you will, and get through them and to connect with her.
Wow. That's so good. And so it's just keep fighting for the relationship. Recognize
Absolutely.
What you're seeing. Yeah.
And also, you know, a wounded daughter will put dads to the test because they're afraid to open their heart because they're not going to get hurt again. And so dads have to prove to her that they can be trusted and they're not going to go away again. And a daughter may test you for several years because she cannot risk being hurt as badly as you hurt her before. So it's going to take time. But if you really want that daughter, you're going to give it a few years and pursue and pursue and pursue, no matter what she communicates to you, what negative thoughts or words she communicates to you, just keep on going through.
Yeah. Wow. No, that's beautiful. That's a great way to end the show. I would love for people to know where they can find your information and find your resources. Can you direct them?
Sure. I have a website, meekerparenting.com, and yeah, lots of resources there and, you know, books and articles that I've written. So meekerparenting.com.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much again for joining me today. We appreciate you being here and speaking such wisdom and truth for the fathers out there and the wives of husbands that are fathers as well. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Paige.
Hey friends, I hope that you enjoyed this episode with Dr. Meg Meeker. I know for me, we're talking about fathers, and I look at my husband, who is an amazing father, but I also realize that I might be causing some stressors or some negative interactions towards himself because of the way that I potentially judge him or criticize him without even knowing it. We talked in our session with Dr. Meg about how the way I even ask him to initiate a conversation with my kids sometimes could be a critical statement that could be discouraging for him. This was a huge revelation for me. I know that I come from a background where I do know how to talk to kids. I do know how to have hard conversations. My husband, he doesn't have the same training, but his voice is so powerful in my kids' lives. And I know you see it too with your husband and father of your kids. It just takes one word from them, one praise from them, and the kids light up. They take the words of their father as onto themselves, onto their hearts in such a powerful way. And so at no point do I want to be detrimental to that. So the conversation today was very helpful. It made me mindful of, when am I speaking over my husband? Because Lord knows he doesn't need another mother, right? I want to be his wife. I want to be his partner. And I want him to be the best father he can be. And so the ways that I can do that is encouraging him, pointing out things that I see, for instance, when he has a conversation with my kiddos and it's jovial and it's fun, and then all of a sudden it turns serious. I get to step back and watch him do that and then praise him afterwards. I get to talk about how my kid is struggling with something and how powerful his voice can be in speaking into my child's life in that way. Encourage our husbands. Encourage the husbands to be the best dads that they possibly can be. That's the power that we get to be as wives. And for those that have father wounds, this is something that you will probably deal with for the rest of your life, because your father is your father. It has shaped who you are. It has shaped your identity, and it has wounded you in a deep level. I highly recommend that you go and you talk to a counselor. You go talk to someone who can speak into this for you, because it does leave scars, and we don't want to be stuck in that. We don't want it to fester. We can find freedom from these father wounds in such a beautiful way that we can live in a place where maybe even one day we can forgive the dads for doing what maybe they didn't even know how to do differently because of the way they were raised or the circumstances that they were born into or how they responded to their own circumstances. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in today for another episode of Embracing Your Season. I hope that you can walk away today feeling encouraged and equipped. And of course, join us next time as we continue to speak to amazing authors and guests about ways that you can grow as a parent, in your marriage, and as yourself. Be blessed.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Embracing Your Season with Paige Klingenpiel. Check out her latest resources and episodes on her website at paigeklingenpiel.com. That's Paige, P-A-I-G-E, Klingenpiel, C-L-I-N-G-E-N-P-E-E-L.com. Also, be sure to follow Paige on all her social media pages, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another edition of Embracing Your Season, Raising Littles and Understanding Teens. This program is sponsored by Homeward. Find out more at homeward.com.
Hi, this is Jim Burns, president of Homeward, and we have four values at Homeward: strong marriages, confident parents, empowered kids, and healthy leaders. Our mission? Helping families succeed. Well, just like Paige's podcast, we assist parents in relevant and practical ways, and we do it while deepening your understanding of these changing times. I hope you'll let us come alongside you to strengthen your marriage, your parenting skills, and even your personal life. Homeward is the largest provider of parenting seminars in the United States, and we'd love to come to your church. And if you'd like to learn more, you can visit our website at homeward.com. That's Homeward, W-O-R-D.com. That's the place where you can also sign up for free blogs, our weekly culture brief, check out our YouTube channel, and many more resources to bring encouragement and inspiration. Homeward, helping families succeed. Visit us at homeward.com.